current humanitarian crisis in Gaza is reported to be the worst since Israel occupied the coastal strip in 1967. More than 80% of Palestinians in Gaza rely on humanitarian assistance, with UN food aid going to about 1.1 million people, or three-quarters of the population. As a result of the Israeli blockade on the territory, travel in and out of Gaza is all but impossible, and this has helped lead to an economic collapse, with the closure of most private businesses in the strip. Unemployment is around 40%, and there is also a shortfall in essential utilities like diesel and electricity. Matthew Davis is the country representative for Catholic Relief Services, or CRS, in the Middle East, and is based in Jerusalem. He says the blockade of Gaza, along with the continuing heavy restrictions on people's movements and goods throughout the West Bank, help explain why there is no improvement in the humanitarian emergency for the Palestinian population. He spoke to my colleague Tracy McClure about this situation and told her how CRS is trying to ease the plight of the people there.
Catholic Relief Services runs a large-scale food security programming in both West Bank and Gaza. We feed on average probably 100,000 people with a combination of food for work activities, food for training, local food production, but also a new and excited urban voucher program where we're targeting urban poor using vouchers and with locally produced items.
Is it an indiscriminate service provided to people, whether they're Muslim, Jewish, Christian?
It's an indiscriminate service. We basically try to target the poorest of the poor and the most needy, while it includes Christian families, as we know in both the West Bank and Gaza is predominantly Muslim, and they remain a large segment of our beneficiaries that we serve. Aside from humanitarian programs, we also run a wide range of youth programming, working with youth, trying to keep them productive, trying to keep them focused on positive components with a very difficult environment that they all work in. We have programs of peace building, getting youths of both Christians and Muslims together, talk about their differences, talk about their similarities, talk about that they just want to be youth and they want a productive future for themselves as Palestinians. So it's a combination, again, of the humanitarian, the youth work, and then the third component, which we stand on, is also our advocacy work. As an American organization giving humanitarian assistance here in the Holy Land for over 50 years, we don't want to continue giving humanitarian assistance over the next 50 years. We really classify what's happening here as a humanitarian situation that is caused by political mishaps. And we don't want to continue to be giving services and not speaking out about some of the issues that are important here to the church, but also issues that most Americans are not fully aware of because of they're not quite in touch with the situation here and are maybe slightly misinformed. And so through some of those programs, we focus on pilgrimage groups, try to get them out to some of our programs to visit some of the families, to have a wider range of understanding of the difficulties of peace in the Middle East, of peace between the Palestinians and the Israelis, and try to find a productive way forward for both sides.
What would you say have been some of the greatest challenges to providing these services?
On the humanitarian front, I think some of the hardest challenges, at least I will say Gaza specific, because that really has been sort of the eye of the storm over the past year, has been the blockade in Gaza. Having humanitarian access has been incredibly difficult, both from our personnel side, providing competent people to go in to work with my Gaza-based Palestinian team, but also getting basic goods into Gaza. We had an example of working with a U.S. government program where we were bringing in basic food commodities early on in February to the most needy families. Our commodities were held up in warehouses in Ramallah by the Israeli authorities because it had a can of tuna in it, and tuna was deemed unhumanitarian. So we asked them, well, if we take the tuna out, will you let the supplies in because there are in Ramallah by the Israeli authorities because it had a can of tuna in it, and tuna was deemed unhumanitarian. So we asked them, well, if we take the tuna out, will you let the supplies in because there are really life-saving supplementary food rations. There are hygiene kits for women. There's a lot of basic items. And they said, yeah, you can take it out, but next week you can resubmit your list, and we'll see if that list will be approved. So it's been an ongoing, I hate to say it, a game of sorts of trying to figure out what we can or can't do in Gaza and keeping the permissions through the Israeli military clear, and it's not always clear. And it's been a huge infringement on our work within Gaza.
It's been, of course, 1 year since that, the invasion of Gaza, the bombing. Mm-hmm. What have you seen any improvements on the humanitarian situation and also getting your supplies in and out, getting your personnel in and out?
I think, unfortunately, 1 year on, we were hoping to be at this point doing some what we classify in the humanitarian context as early recovery programs, where we're working with community-based organizations, helping them basically rebuild their lives over the course of what has happened to them, not only over the past year, but over the past decade, really. Unfortunately, we are still doing basic humanitarian support because we're not allowed to bring basic, besides a list of about 10 items, basic supplies into Gaza. So we can't bring in cement to help fix a school. We can't bring in glass to put up windows in the orphanage because those items are deemed unhumanitarian by certain authorities here within Israel, and not giving us then the access to bring these in and to do these basic programming. So we're still really, unfortunately, 1 year in, still at square one, providing basic humanitarian assistance within supplementary food, basic psychosocial services. But if we're trying to scale up and do true transitional development-based programs, it's still not happening in Gaza.
What do you say when you go back to the United States, to the people you work with, maybe even to people down on the Hill?
I think number one, for both sides, we want peace here. We want peace for the Israelis. We want peace for the Palestinians. And we need to find a way to end the political stalemate that has continued here for decades. It is counterproductive for American policy within the Middle East for the continued practices in Gaza to continue. We don't want a situation where the local population becomes more radicalized because they aren't receiving basic services under occupation. At the same time, we turn to our Palestinian colleagues here. We have to tell them really that for things to move forward, we need unity government. We need both sides to work better internally and both sides to communicate better. And I think my song and dance would be for the American legislative group is to have a better understanding of what is happening here, to come here, to see it, to taste it, to feel the situation, that it's not everything that the U.S. media puts out there is necessarily a fact, that people have to come and see for themselves to understand the constraints that Palestinians are living under, to realize what is happening and why it's happening. Palestinians have lived over 50 years of occupation, and there's frustrations at certain levels. The Israelis live in a great fear for their country and their society, and I believe the vast majority of the Israelis want to live in peace with Palestinians, and we need to encourage our politicians to actively work to find a productive solution so the two groups can move forward for both sides.
One of the suggestions we've heard here is that our politicians, congressmen, should come with some of their constituency, rabbis, imams, people from various different religious groups, and bring them here to the Holy Land so they can see for themselves as well the very different realities on the ground.
No, and I think that's very helpful. From the side of Catholic Services, we have through various groups, through U.S. Congress, but also through different religious groups that have come here at the very high level to come and see and experience. And when they can come, feel it, again, taste it, and understand it, I think it's incredibly helpful. Sometimes the problem is, though, the people that come have already been, to use the term, converted. They do understand the situation. And what we really need is the people that don't understand the situation, that haven't been here, that don't have a good grasp of the day-to-day consequences of some of U.S. government policy here, when I think it is well-intended. It's not bearing the results that one would have hoped, and it might be slightly exasperating the situation here as well.
I'm a big fan of education and getting people to talk to each other. And you were mentioning these youth groups or youth initiatives where you're getting Muslims and Christians to meet each other. How important is that for an eventual peace in this region?
I think it is important, but I also think that there might be a misunderstanding with some people that it's not necessarily a Muslim-Christian issue. It might be more of an issue between Palestinians and Israelis. People tie it into religion, everything here, it being the Holy Land. And it is a focal point in Jerusalem, potentially a boiling point for the entire world. And I think it's a misunderstanding that people think that they equate what's happening in Iraq to what is persecution of Christians as what is necessarily happening here in Israel and Palestine. And that's not necessarily the case. Yes, there are some misunderstandings sometimes between the Christian and the Muslim communities, but quite often they're willing to stand side by side for the greater cause that they believe of Palestine. Palestine and the people of Palestine and the security for both Christian Arabs but also Christian Muslims as well too. And I don't think that the argument goes to that it's a break or a fight between Israeli Jewish community or the Israeli religious community and Palestinian Christians and Muslims, but it's really at a different level. And that people from the outside, I think, step in and say, oh, there must be horrible for Christians to live under Muslim persecution. Yes, there are issues between the two communities, but nowhere at the same level that they have between the State of Israel and the people of Palestine.
What do you think Christianity and Christians can bring to peace here?
I think that they can be a strong voice on many levels. And I think, and I use this with politicians in the U.S., I say that you can be supportive of an even-handed policy, a U.S. policy in Israel, knowing that the Christian community is supportive of that. We're not looking to punish Israel. We're not looking to persecute any one side of the two sides that are at odds. But at the same time, we need an even-handed approach. And I think the Christian community here, while small, has a large voice to be played, and one that can be is almost a balancing act between the Muslim community and the Jewish community, because we have the ability to bridge communication differences between the two sides. So I think our voice is strong. Our voice is a moderate in-between and a go-between can be a driving force to try to get a better mutual understanding between all the parties here.
That was Matthew Davis of Catholic Relief Services in Jerusalem speaking to Tracy McClure.